This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We heard yesterday on this program from Janet Yellen, the chair of the Federal Reserve, the sitting chair of the Federal Reserve, I should say, which is to say that she's kind of got to watch what she says, right? Lest we all, freak out, right? Mervyn King has no such restrictions. Lord King, as he was titled after he left office, was for 10 years the governor of the Bank of England, 10 years that saw the run-up to and the full-blown effects of the financial crisis and the recession. And he says we are not out of the woods yet. He says it in his new book. It's called The End of Alchemy. Lord King, welcome to the program.
Very pleased to be with you.
Let me start, sir, with the title of this book, which does kind of jump off the cover. The End of Alchemy, you have called it, which does imply, that word alchemy, something not necessarily on the up and up.
Well, alchemy was always converting base metal into gold, something that wasn't very valuable into something that was. And our monetary and banking system also has an element of this with bank deposits, which people believe they can always take out when they want. But in fact, if everyone tried to take the money out of the bank, it wouldn't be there. That paper money or even electronic money depends on the trust of the government or issuer of that currency. It isn't all quite what it seems.
Did something happen in the financial crisis to change your mind? Because you were an academic economist. You were a central banker for what? You ran the Bank of England for 5 or 6 years before the crisis happened.
Before the crisis.
Yes. 10 years all told, right? 10 years all told.
Yes,
and now on the other side. Now on the other side of it, you seem to be changing your mind.
No, not changing my mind, but I think having left the bank, I had a chance to think and reflect, and I think my thinking has evolved, and what I've tried to come up with is a better way in which we can ensure that the banking system is safer.
All right, so let's talk about a couple of those, because you say basically that the people at the heart of the financial crisis in 2008 and 2009 were fundamentally good people, but running a system that was built on bad ideas. What were the bad ideas then?
I think the first bad idea was to believe that the global economy or even the U.S. economy was just going steadily on an ever upward path with occasional blips up and down. But in fact, it wasn't like that. We were moving into quite a serious disequilibrium. And we've got ourselves into a position where it's become increasingly difficult for central banks to stimulate spending in the economy.
Do you think that central banks now are, as is often said over here when we're talking about the Fed, out of ammunition? That we don't have any bullets left?
I don't think they're out of ammunition, but I think the bullets are bouncing off the target too easily. I think the analogy I would use is central banks are like cyclists, and the hill which they're cycling up is getting steeper and steeper. So they have to pedal faster and faster to make the same rate of progress.
All right, so we'll get to the future and the answers in a second, but I want to back you up because, and I say this with all due respect, you were running one of the three or four most important central banks on the planet while this was going on. And now, 5 years after the crisis, you've come out with this book. Where were you when you were in a position to do something about it, sir?
Well, I was talking and giving speeches about what I called the paradox of policy during the crisis. I said in 2008 and 2009 that we could not carry on with this monetary stimulus indefinitely, that it was fine as a short-term stimulus, but it wouldn't be the answer to our long-term problems. Indeed, nobody involved in this actually had any incentive to take actions themselves, whether it was bankers who were taking too much risk with high leverage or in getting involved in very complex securities. If any bank had opted out of all that 5 years before the crisis hit, I doubt that the senior executives would have got through to 2007 without being fired because they would not have made the profits that other banks were making. Mm-hmm. And equally, any central bank that said, well, hang on a minute, interest rates are just going down and down. This cannot be the right long-run answer. If any one central bank had decided to put up interest rates, well, it certainly would have caused a downturn, probably a recession in their own economy, but it would have made no difference to the likelihood of a global recession.
Since I have you on the phone, I'm obliged to ask about the conversations that you and Ben Bernanke and Mario Draghi and Tim Geithner were having as this was going on. Did you know the scale of what you were facing?
I think one of the things that we fairly quickly came to a view on was that the banks had to be recapitalized. They simply did not have enough equity capital to absorb either the losses that were likely to occur or certainly not enough to give confidence to the market that it was safe to continue lending to banks. And of course, at that stage, the answer was, well, let's try to lend money to banks to replace the institutions that had been lending to them to try and keep the system afloat, not because we wanted to bail out the banks, but because we wanted to protect the economy from the failure of the banking system.
Let's stick in the present here for a minute. This recovery, while it has been long and it has been steady, it has been underperforming, I guess you could say. And I wonder why you think that is.
Well, I think it's pretty clear what the answer isn't. And if you were to come from Mars and have a look, and you would see the biggest monetary stimulus the world has ever seen, and yet 7 or 8 years after the end of the banking component of the crisis, that the recovery was still so slow, you would draw the pretty obvious conclusion that monetary stimulus wasn't the answer to the problem. And the reason is that monetary stimulus can give you a short-term boost to spending while you put in place the measures that are necessary to shift the economy to a new equilibrium. This isn't the case that the recovery is slow because we're just facing another headwind, which is going on a bit longer than we had expected. It isn't that kind of problem. It's a problem that we need to shift the structure of our economy to a new equilibrium, and the US and the UK has to export more and shift away from consumer spending as a reliance for our growth. And Germany and China have to do the opposite. And we have to get to a point where people are willing to save and willing to invest when interest rates go back to a more normal level.
Acknowledging that this is only a half-an-hour radio program, sir, how are you going to do that?
Well, I think we have to recognize that monetary and fiscal stimulus is not the sole answer here. I'm not suggesting we take that away at present, but it isn't the long-run answer. I think in the longer run, there are probably three things we need to do. One is collectively around the world to recognize that we need exchange rates to move and be more flexible than was the case in the past 20 years. I think the move to fix exchange rates against the US dollar in many countries in Asia, obviously especially China, was a mistake. And I think the attempt to fix exchange rates within the euro area was also a mistake. I think the second thing we need to do, and I know it's easy to say, but I do think it's central to where we are now, is to say to people who realize that before the crisis they were probably spending more than they now think was justified by their future prospects, we have to improve those future prospects. And the only way to do that is to boost productivity. And that will require a whole range of measures, many small, but collectively, when you put them all together over many years, will make people more optimistic about the future. And the third thing we need to do is to recognize that one of the best ways to improve productivity is to boost trade. And I think trade in services amongst the advanced economies is a route which needs to be pushed further and farther than it has been so far. I would like to see the United States really take the lead in that.
Have you been watching the presidential campaign over here at all, Lord King?
Of course. I think people around the world always watch the U.S. presidential campaign.
I'm going to go away. You don't think I'm going to go. I'm going to ask you about Bernie Sanders and what he has to say about Wall Street and how it is fundamentally the root of all problems in this society. And one of the things he says is, why hasn't anybody gone to jail? Is it really true, do you think, that they were all good people wrapped up in bad ideas?
I'm sure there were some people who were excessively greedy, incompetent, and there was probably some criminal behavior too. But simply putting people in jail won't solve our problems and won't prevent another crisis. If the system is fundamentally flawed, then the most important thing we should do now for our grandchildren is not to jail people that we don't like from the past, but to change the system so that in future it won't fail as it did in 2008.
It's not like that's going to make anybody not do this again, though, right? If we just say, oh, don't do that again.
Oh, I think it will, because the proposals in my book would force banks to take out insurance in good times, in order that in bad times during a crisis, they would have paid the insurance premium and therefore be entitled to the liquidity support of the central bank.
A word here about Europe before I let you go, Lord King, and how you see the European experiment, I guess, with the Eurozone and the single currency and all of that playing out in the face of what are once again seeming to be intractable problems, Greece and debt and all of that.
So I think the euro area is facing extremely difficult problems. I don't know how it will play out because I think it's become a struggle between political will on the one hand and economic arithmetic on the other. And I think the tragedy of it is that the countries that created the euro area did so from the best of motives. In particular, Germany did so to bind itself into Europe in order to remove the fear that other European countries might have that a powerful, both economic and politically powerful Germany would make them frightened again. And what has happened? Germany has become the most dominant economic and political power in Europe. The consequence of monetary union has been the opposite of what the original founders intended. And it's a terrible problem now for Germany. This was not a situation which they had wanted or sought, but they are now seen as the power that is meant to tell countries how to behave, how to reduce their fiscal deficits. It's the country that's expected to pay for other countries if they need financial support. This wasn't the intended outcome at all. And I don't want to venture a guess as to what will happen, but the real risk now is that the inability to use the exchange rate as a shock absorber in the euro area is condemning the area as a whole to much slower growth than it should be experiencing.
Should there be, do you suppose, a default or two, say Greece, Spain maybe, to shock the Europeans into stability?
I don't think that will shock people into abandoning their objective, which is a political one, of trying to ensure a single currency for Europe. I think it is quite likely that defaults will occur down the road, and it is extremely difficult to see that Greece, locked into the single currency at its present conversion rate, can hope to repay the debt that it owes. So I think that one of the risks in the future is indeed that whether it's countries, whether it's banks, whether it's companies, whether or households, that we will see in the coming years debt defaults as people start to recognize the true value of their assets. I think the great achievement of the United States, and I think the United Kingdom as well, was to ensure that the banking system valued its assets and liabilities fairly and had to recapitalize the system to reflect that. I don't think that's happened elsewhere in the world.
Last thing, sir, and then I'll let you go. June the 23rd is the referendum in the UK on whether to stay or to go out of the eurozone. Without asking you how you're going to vote, how do you think it's going to go?
I have no idea how my fellow citizens will vote. I worry that at this stage, the campaign seems to be that one group says that if Britain were to leave the European Union, we should be a land of milk and honey. And the other group says that if we leave, we should be a land of locusts and plagues. Neither view seems to me plausible. I think we need to hear the arguments set out. It hasn't happened yet. So if you are worried about the political debate in the United States, I don't think you should worry quite so much. It's not as good here as it should be. And we have 4 more months of this referendum. And what I hope is that we'll move to a campaign where people are willing to acknowledge that the other side do have some points on their side, and we hear a balanced statement of all the arguments and all the facts so that people can make up their own mind. And with 4 months to go, I see no reason why I should make up my mind at this stage either.
Here's the thing, though, sir. You're going to be done in 4 months, and we've still got, what, June, July, August? We've got like 5 more after that over here, so at least you'll have something to watch.
I certainly look forward to watching.
Mervyn King, Lord King, governor of the Bank of England for 10 years, 2003 to 2013. His book is called The End of Alchemy, Money Banking and the Future of the Global Economy. Lord King, thanks very much for your time, sir.
Thank you very much.